I read a book of short stories in May that I've been mulling over all summer. It's called Anything is Possible by Elizabeth Strout, and it's set in Amgash, Illinois, a fictional small town. Each of the 9 stories flow from the vantage point of a different person in the town: the retired high school janitor, the Vietnam vet, the guidance counselor, the nursing home aide, and some others. And as the stories accumulate, the losses and the longings of the characters are revealed, sometimes across generations. There is a matter-of-factness about the way Strout describes their very hard lives, so that you sense that the characters can behave no other way, either in their petty selfishness or in their stunning generosity. When I finished the book, I found myself wondering about some of the missing details. Is Charlie's PTSD easing? How can Lila do so well in school when she is so neglected at home? With a novel, there's this powerful omniscience there that pulls you into the protagonist and makes you think you know everything about all the characters. But with Strout's stories, you remain at this distance, and you're always aware of what you don't know. That sense of distance and not knowing can be unsettling, but that's a good thing, I think, because I can be so at home in a singular viewpoint, my own, that I lose sight of all of the others. And we can become so engrossed in the story in which we are the only character who appears in every single scene that we miss the rich, unique, and complex stories that just swirl around us. The ones we might know and love better if we could just get some distance from our own. The first reading from Sirach warns against the kind of pride that comes from assuming our own experience is objective reality. Sirach was written in the 2nd century BCE, part of the wisdom tradition that includes Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And the author is writing to Jews who were influenced by Greek culture and who no longer feel a deep need for God. Sirach calls this pride, and he denounces it because he says it withdraws the heart from its maker. And so he's calling them back to their tradition of reverence and humility in response to their holy, ineffable God. That reverence and humility is what fear of the Lord means. It doesn't mean to be afraid of a stern, authoritarian God, but to respond to God with humility and reverence. In the gospel today, Jesus builds on this wisdom tradition. We heard he's been invited to the house of the leading Pharisee for a Sabbath meal. So we know it's the most special meal of the week. And in all likelihood, he's going to be rubbing shoulders with the most powerful, the most wealthy, and the most pious members of the religious community. They watch him closely, and he watches them right back. The guests jockey for position, trying to grab a seat closest to the host, the place of honor. Each one of them is locked in his own viewpoint, where the story of this dinner is about one person, himself, and everyone else has a bit part in reflecting that importance back to him. Jesus sees it, and so he tells them the parable. When you're invited to a wedding banquet, don't take the best seat at the table. There might be someone there who deserves it more, and then when your host moves you to a lower spot, you'll be embarrassed. Instead, take the seat no one else wants, because your host will make sure that you are in the right place. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Now, this is a parable, not literal instruction on table etiquette, but it's probably useful, solid advice when you're going out with a large group for a company dinner, right? But it's much more than that. The verb that's translated as exalt also means to lift up, and it appears several other times in really important places in the gospel. Mary uses it in the Magnificat when she praises God, saying, "God has brought down the powerful and has lifted up the lowly." And this word is used when Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. He tells his followers, "When the Son of Man is lifted up, you will realize that I am doing what the Father instructed me." In the gospel, Jesus continues to talk to his host. When you have a dinner, don't just invite your friends and family. Include the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And you will be blessed when the righteous are raised up. There's that metaphor again. Resurrection, lifting up, being one with God. And it's connected to this invitation. So Jesus is calling these people back down to earth. His host, the guests, all of them, come back down out of their pride and self-aggrandizement to that place of humility and reverence. And he promises them that when they widen their circle, inviting the poor and the marginalized into the heart of the banquet, that they will be blessed. Blessed, of course, by the practice of radical hospitality and the love and mercy that flow from it, but also blessed with that gift of distance, where we get pulled out of our identity as the main character of the story, and we're given space to appreciate and to bless the holy lives of others. There's something else, too. As I read Strout's book, I realized that being held at a distance from the story allows us to see something that the individual characters cannot. Each of them identifies as being isolated in some way and feels like an outsider in this small town. But we see how their stories brush up against each other and how their lives become intertwined. How childhood mistakes can be repaired in middle age. How the kindness of parents is paid back to their children without them knowing. And how the most unlikely people provide the perfect balm of healing for others. Despite the harshness and the deprivation in the lives of these people, there are these shining threads of tenderness and resilience and steely dignity in Amgash. And they weave the town together generation after generation. And the presence of the Holy One that we sang to in the psalm today, that presence saturates all of it. And so it is for us, generation after generation, offering our hearts to the presence of God, staying rooted in this reverence and humility. That is the only way I know that can sustain us in these times when a person goes on a senseless shooting spree in Odessa with 7 people dead and 21 injured. We must not look away. We must speak out and vote and stand with those who suffer as a result of this. It is so tempting to close our hearts with the overwhelm of all of this, but the wisdom tradition tells us we must open our hearts to our Maker. And that is the way that this grace is passed down through generations. I leave you with a poem by the Polish-American Nobel laureate, Czesław Miłosz. It's called Love. Love means to learn to look at yourself the way one looks at distant things, for you are only one thing among many. And whoever sees that way heals the heart, without knowing it, from various ills. A bird and a tree say to him, "Friend, Then he wants to use himself and things so that they stand in the glow of ripeness. It doesn't matter whether he knows what he serves. Who serves best doesn't always understand.